Have you ever been listening to NPR and thought to yourself, gosh, I love the human interest aspect, the dulcet voices of the hosts, the promise of totes, but I just hate how true it all is? That's where we come in. It's This American Lie, an hour of improvised NPR. We're a lot like that other show, but we make it all up in front of a live audience every second Saturday at the Nerdist School stage. Find show and ticket information at nerdistschool.com or catch the podcast on the Nerdist School Network. Search for us on iTunes.
The Nerdist School Network. For class and show information, visit nerdistschool.com.
Hey, foodie callers. Thank you so much for tuning in with us every week. If you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button on iTunes and leave us a rating and review. Fun fact, leaving a review makes a huge difference with iTunes and helps us bring you more foodie call every freaking week. Did you know we're also on social media? You can follow us for live foodie updates on Instagram and Twitter at Foodie Call Pod. And for recipes and confusing posts from my great aunt Virginia, like our Facebook page, facebook.com/foodiecallpodcast. Got a suggestion for a guest or want some meat sale advice from Omar? Shoot us an email, foodiecallpodcast@gmail.com. Did you get all that? For our social security and credit card numbers, listen to the end of this show. Thanks so much for listening. We love you way more than grocery flyers.
Foodie, foodie, foodie. Not quite a booty call, a foodie call. Booty call, foodie call. Not quite a booty call, a foodie call.
Booty call, the interview podcast that asks guests, what's your secret sauce? With your hosts, Kylie Hodges and Omar Nava.
Booty call.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to
Foodie Call,
where each week we discuss one delicious food dish with a hilarious guest and find out what their secrets are in the kitchen. I'm your host, Kylie Hodges, TV host, producer, and podcast extraordinaire. I don't have a fun fact to throw in there this week, but I really love food. Sitting across from me is Omar Nava, comedian, writer, and do you have a fun fact?
And I once got banned from Six Flags Fiesta Texas for shoplifting.
Oh my God.
Was that not fun?
I mean, I'm just very surprised that you of all people would be a shoplifter.
Yeah, I hit rock bottom. It was a dark time in my life.
How old were you?
I was an eighth grader, so 13 or 14.
And what'd you steal?
Anything.
It
was
what?
It was the dumbest stuff.
You stole multiple things?
Oh yeah, multiple things. It was just like little like necklaces and like trinkets and bracelets and sunglasses. It was a stupid.
So are you still banned from it?
No, it was, I mean, I don't even know if I was ever banned. They said I was banned, but like they never took my picture or anything. I don't know. I guess they could have lifted it from the security cams.
Wow, I'm dating a criminal.
Yeah.
I'm kind of into it. You kind of like remember when that one guy went viral for being a felon, but he was really hot and he had a mugshot?
Yeah.
That's you.
That's me.
All right. If you guys haven't already, please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Foodie Call Pod. We do lots of live or Instagram stories showing you guys what we're cooking, and Omar gives the weekly deals and steals rundown. But we also do that here, but in a little more detail. So you got to follow us on all social media outlets to get all the deals and steals.
Right, yeah, Omar? There are no shortcuts in life, people.
Wow. All right. Well,
sorry. I learned it in jail.
Yeah. I just brought out like the felon side in Omar, and he's very aggressive.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our sweet and sour moments of the week.
Ooh.
Okay, so I want to talk about a trip that we just got back from. This is our summer of weddings. So we've had a lot of back-to-back weekends of travel. And so this time around, we had a wedding in Milwaukee, which was so fun to see my college friend Tybo and Emma get married. And I took Omar to the Lakefront Brewery in Milwaukee, which if you haven't been, you have to go. It's the number three best brewery tour in the world, mainly because they get you really drunk and it's really fun. But I took Omar to the fish fry and it was really delicious.
Yeah, they have good fish fry.
The beer was great too, but we didn't do the beer tour. I have done
beer.
It before though.
Wait, what was the beer we got? We got like a...
It was a gluten-free, IPA. Or a Pilsner.
It was a gluten-free beer. It was delicious.
You don't like IPA, so I imagine you probably
bought a Pilsner. Yeah, I wouldn't have ordered a
IPA. It was really good.
Yeah.
And I've never had a gluten-free beer before, so I can't compare the two, but I imagine it was up there. They also pointed out to us that was one of their award-winning beers.
Yeah. We also, in case you guys were worried we were going to be gluten deficient, we also got fried cheese curds, which I'm sure were
and fried fish and fried potatoes.
Yeah, so
and didn't you
don't
get like a potato pancake?
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah, I got a very, little potato pancake.
But the best part, our second
it rained.
Wedding.
Oh.
I was just going to fast forward to 5 days later when we flew to Cancun for another wedding. That was fun and games. And then we had a magical 17-hour layover in Mexico City. And it was literally a dream come true for me. What was it, a dream come true for you?
Yeah. Well, I had already been. I'd already been to Mexico City. But it was.
But not with me.
But not with you. It was pretty fun to show you the ropes.
So for those of you who don't know me, I love speaking Spanish. I guess I have a thing for Latinos, considering I'm dating Omar. But you're the only Latino I've ever dated, so it's not like I have a weird fetish or anything. I just really love the culture. Omar's giving me a weird face, and I don't know why.
I don't know.
Wait, what?
Huh?
Why are you giving me that face?
I didn't know I was making a face. I was just listening to you intently.
It kind of looks like you're judging me or making fun of me.
Oh, no, no, no.
All right. Wait, oh my god! He just, like, did, like, the big eyes thing. All right, well, anyways, all I'm saying is that I get very excited about the Latin American culture because I speak the language, I studied it a lot in school, and I feel like I'm very enthusiastic about it. Is that creepy?
No, okay. you sound so defensive, and
I'm
literally just listening to you.
I'm defensive because of your judging eyes.
No.
Whatever, this conversation went very sour. This was going to be my sweet moment, but now it's my sour
I
moment.
Inherited my mom's, as we call, cara de caca, which is poop face.
Resting bitch face.
Resting bitch face, yeah. Like,
but you don't have that.
Well, sometimes I do, apparently, because I was just listening to you.
It felt judgy. It felt like you were going to make fun. Whatever. We're not fighting on the podcast.
I guess we apparently we are.
All I was going to say was Mexico City was awesome. I really want to go back. It was so cheap.
It was exhausting.
Well, because it was a 17-hour layover. Running. That's why. Go on.
Oh, no. Did you want me to run down everything we did?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just my complaint. It was exhausting.
But it wasn't exhausting. Like, the city isn't exhausting. It was exhausting because of how we chose to approach it. Like, we landed at noon. We immediately, Omar has a friend who lives in Mexico City, so we dropped our bags off at her house after sitting in horrendous traffic, which it made me miss LA traffic. It was that crazy because it's not like you can hop on the 101 in Mexico City. There is no 101. It's just a lot of crazy, crazy street traffic. And then we went to this neighborhood called La Condesa.
Mm-hmm.
Not Condensa, Condesa, right?
Yeah, I think so.
La Condesa, which if you go, you should definitely hit up that neighborhood. It's kind of like it felt like the WeHo or the Silver Lake of Mexico City.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a little hipstery, yeah, but also yuppie-ness to it.
That's why I feel like WeHo, maybe. Or like Los Feliz. Yeah. Anyways, those are all LA suburbs, so if you don't live here, sorry. but it was very nice and beautiful, and we went to this restaurant called Tacos Goose. We had amazing tacos.
Yum.
We posted a picture of it on our Instagram. You can check it out.
We had huitlacoche.
Yeah, what is that?
For those who don't know, it's corn smut. And if you don't know what that is either, it's when a fungus infects corn, the kernels, and then they, I don't know, harvest it just before it, like, bursts into spores. It's called...
It's an interesting flavor, too.
Yeah, they...
it's, like, sweet,
they,
but
being,
not
like, Mexican chefs, are trying to get it be, like, recognized as Mexican truffles.
Oh, wow.
Because I guess it's, like, an acquired taste, and it has like that umami flavor to it too. Yeah. So, and it's like a fungus, which I guess is what truffles are, mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you gotta try it. I don't know how to explain it because it's sweet, but it's not.
Yeah. It's very good.
It was great. And then after that, like, I met one of Omar's tias who lives in the city, and she took us to a Cuban dance club and kept us out until 3 in the morning, and we had to be at the airport at 5. And I literally laid down for a 15-minute nap, and then we got up and went to the airport. And actually, we overslept by 20 minutes, so we, like, Home Alone style
ran
through customs. But we did it! So my sweet moment was all of that travel, and my sour moment was your judging eyes when telling the story.
Okay, that's fair. My sweet moment was judging you while you told the story.
Thanks, homie.
Yeah. No, I mean, my sweet moment was... Actually, my sweet moment was Cancun. We took one of those, like, day excursions out to Chichen Itza, which is, I guess, now, like, a wonder of the world. It's like, a pyramid that the Mayans built back in the day, and right next to it, which is already, like, really cool, and it's, like, really interesting. It's really big and really hot and really humid, and it was kind of miserable, but also really cool to, like, walk around. And then, like, 5 minutes...
It was the most humid
I've... It was the most humid she's ever had.
I get so cranky in the heat, and that was, like, next level, like, suffocating humidity.
But, to treat the humidity and the heat, our tour guide, drove us to a cenote, which is like a big watering hole.
Sinkhole.
Yeah, not a
it's
watering
100
hole.
Feet below the ground.
And then from there, it's like 150 feet deep, like the water.
Yeah.
And it's just like a freshwater sinkhole from like all the rain that just collects in these holes, and there's like fish that live in there,
mm-hmm.
and it's beautiful. Like open to the public. It's, yeah, you just like, I don't know what the entrance fee is, but you pay it. It for us, it was like included in like the tour, the mm-hmm. day, the excursion, and then you go down and you swim, and it's refreshing and awesome. And honestly, if you Google it, it looks exactly like it does in pictures. Sometimes you like, you hear about something and you like look it up and you're like, oh, this looks awesome, and then you go and you're like, meh, it looks better. Look, I like the movie better. But, like, this looks exactly like it looks in pictures. Magical.
Yeah, it really was majestic. I'm really happy that we did it. All right. You ready to move on to the next segment?
Oh, and my sour moment was... Sorry, real quick. We got back from the salsa club, and I was, like, so tired that I just decided to throw caution to the wind and brush my teeth with tap water. Oh. And then my stomach was upset for the next, like, 2 days. The whole weekend or the week, whatever, the whole time we're in Mexico, I like avoided drinking tap water. I was just drinking bottled water. And then that last day, I was like, wow, I'm just brushing my teeth. Nothing's going to happen. And then I almost threw up. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rough morning on the way to the airport. We were struggling.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. Right?
Totally.
All right. Next segment. Deals and steals.
Deals and steals, y'all.
You guys know how this goes. Omar loves grocery flyers more than life itself. The average person does not. Omi's going to tell you where the deals and steals are at.
I'm going to switch it up this week in that I'm going to model my deals and steals after a very popular podcast that I was turned on to by a friend called Hardcore History. And if you've ever heard it, the guy just has a very distinct voice. So I'm just going to do the deals and steals and in his voice. I'm going to do an impression of him. And I'm going to call it Hardcore Groceries. So first we have the red cherries. And as we all know, the red cherries are common fruit found in North America. And you can buy it at $1.48 a pound, which is not too bad. But you think... It's not as good as the berries. The berries, as we all know, are a staple crop of many pies and sweets and treats. So you have strawberries, a 1 pound package, or blueberries, 6 ounces, at 3 for $5. But what's really interesting is you have the mangoes. And the mangoes, as we all know, were a terrible fruit. They ruled Asia with a bloody thirst.
Okay.
Sorry, just mangoes sounded like Mongols. Because of the wordplay, it sounded so similar. But seriously, the organic red mangoes are 98 cents each. The organic baby broccoli is 98 cents each. Oh, and I forgot to mention that this is, as we all know, Sprouts. Because Sprouts has proven time and again to be my grocery store of choice. The bell peppers are 2 for $1, the red and green. Do I even sound like him? I probably don't. In my head,
actually,
I sound like
him. Actually, I'm really impressed. You really? Yeah. Oh, and, man. Like, a lot of comics out here have to do impressions, and especially the comedians that try to get on SNL, part of your audition is you have to do impressions. And I've always thought, like, when the day comes where you get your your audition. What impressions are you going to do? Because you don't really do
Dan
impressions
Carlin
in your stand-up.
From Hardcore History.
Yeah, it'll just be a podcaster that I guarantee you Lauren Michaels hasn't heard of.
No, my impressions are going to be impressions of comedians doing impressions. It's my impression of Melissa Villaseñor's Owen Wilson. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You are really good at that.
This is my impression of Jeremiah Watkins' Michael Caine. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Master Bruce. I failed you. I failed you.
Oh my God, you're so talented.
Yeah.
All right, on that note, I gotta wrap up this segment. It was just too good to let it go on any longer.
It was too good. Wait, let me give one meat. That was all produce. I'll give one meat. Oh, the Sprouts app crashed.
Sprouts Sorry, app guys. Is the worst. Sprouts, thank you for following us back on Instagram.
But your it app, you really got to work on it.
Yeah, you really need to fix that.
How come
app?
I got to sign in every time? Every time I got to sign in.
It's really glitchy. All right, coming up next, our guest is going to come on and talk with us about Kebab Kubide and Morgan Freeman.
Yum.
It's time for a foodie call.
All right, today's guest is the perfect foodie call guest, and here's why. He's done comedy, so he's fun to hang out with. He loves to eat. Omar and I are big fans of that. And he works in TV as a producer, like Travel Channel's Booze Traveler and Nat Geo's Story of God with Morgan Freeman, and the upcoming next season, Story of Us. Welcome, Reza Riazi!
Yeah!
Yay!
Hey,
Did I get anything wrong in your intro?
No, except for... I like that you assumed I love food just because I'm a bigger dude, but I do love food, so you're right.
I would never categorize you as a bigger dude. The reason I think you love food is because whenever Omar hangs out with you much more than me.
Sure.
Obviously, you guys are like friends, and then I'm the default friend, but that's fine.
Don't put yourself in that category.
I didn't mean to make this about me. What I'm saying is Omar talks about hanging out with you, it's like you guys go to eat somewhere, and he's always like, oh, it was so good. We ate at this place, and you live... on the west side, which we never go to.
On the west side,
you're like the tour guide of the west side for Omar.
I guess so. I feel like we don't actually go out to eat that much. But it's funny because whenever I do go to his place, and I made a joke about this the other day, his wife, Heather, big homie Heather to the listeners, his wife, Heather, will all like, I don't know if she does it subconsciously or it's just like coincidence, but there's always like Mexican food that you guys are eating when I'm there. And then we always make jokes about it. Like, oh yeah, Heather knew you were coming. So she made some tacos today.
Yeah. So she's like subconsciously racist towards you, but also wants to make you comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, in a good way.
Yeah. And accommodating.
Yeah.
Racist.
Yeah. She's very, she's subconsciously accommodatingly racist towards you. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Honestly, if the rest of America were like that,
yeah,
we'd be all right.
Yeah.
We'd be all right.
Like, next time you get accosted by the police, they give you a taco also.
How comforting. Yeah. Let's take our listeners back. How did you two meet?
We met in stand-up, right? That's when I used to do stand-up.
Back when Reza was crushing the stand-up stages.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't say crushing because I feel like that minimizes what I was doing. Because what I was doing was so much bigger than that.
That's true.
But sure, but we can go with crushing.
Yeah. Reza was bigger than stand-up.
We can go with crushing. We met doing stand-up, right? I feel like, and this is either going to end up a totally fake story or the right story. I feel like we met hanging out in a car outside a Chick-fil-A with me, Yasser, you, and Jeff, right?
That is 100% the correct story.
Yes.
Weird.
And we were listening to mashups.
Yeah.
In Jeff's car.
Yeah, Jeff loves...
Jeff Amaral.
Mashup, like... what's that? Girl Talk?
Yeah, and then we're also with Yasser Lester, episode 10 guest.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, right?
Well,
he's
if
a
we
future...
can, if we can get
he's
him.
He's so famous for us.
Yeah,
now.
He's your
we'll
future
book
booking.
Him.
Actually, we brought you on so that we could talk about Yasser. It's the
here.
Next best
okay,
thing.
Okay, cool. I'm just
You're
here to talk about
Yasser. Yes,
got it. Okay. Got it. Yeah, we saw you guys at Chick-fil-A.
Well, no, I think... What happened was, all right, you had it right.
Okay.
Just quit while you're ahead. No, I think what happened was we were at the Comedy Store.
And from there,
you and Yas were like, hey, we're going to go to Chick-fil-A. And Jeff and I were like, oh, okay, yeah. Cool. And then I think we all rode in Jeff's car.
And then you got in the car and I was like, no, we said Chick-fil-A, not Taco Bell.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's how it started. And then for some reason, since then.
Yeah, and then we went to Chick-fil-A and just hung out and talked. And
yeah.
That was the first time we met.
Yeah. And at the time, I don't know how old you were, but I thought you were 26. And for some reason, you've agelessly been 26. Yeah. Like, even now when people are like, how old is Omar? I'm like, oh, he's like 26.
Yeah. And it's funny because I'm older than you.
Yeah,
you
I know.
Always forget that.
You are?
Yeah.
Omar's older than everybody, and everybody is startled by that.
I'm like a warm vampire.
When we were in Europe, we went on this beer tour in Prague. And we were with a bunch of European spring breakers, so they were like 19.
A bunch of backpackers, you know, like sure. Just fresh out of college or still in college, 19, 20-year-olds.
And they all thought we were like 22 or 23, and I don't know why we were talking about age with these kids, but we were like, no, I'm 27, my boyfriend's 32.
Nicolas and was shocked.
The Germans could not handle it. And actually, the whole vibe changed once they found out our ages.
That's
like,
so
they were a
funny.
Little weirded out that we were so much older than them, and then we were like, what? Are we not allowed to travel Europe because we're no longer in college?
So I've always been the exact opposite, where everybody's always thought I was way older. Like, I was a person who could buy beer at 16, no problem, at the 7-Eleven. And I remember one time, this is when I lived in Hollywood, not the West Side, where Omar comes and visits me now.
Right.
Yeah.
When I lived in Hollywood, we met up with a bunch of friends at the Three of Clubs.
Mm-hmm.
On Vine. And I had forgotten my ID, like a genuine forgot your ID thing. But I know that that's the excuse that everybody uses who's underage. So I went up to the bouncer and I'm like, hey, man, this isn't a line. I forgot my ID. I'm here to meet a bunch of people. It's going to be a huge pain in the ass to go back because pre-Uber, all that kind of stuff. And he's like, how old are you, man? And I was like, I'm 21. And he's like, you're only 21? He's like, get in there and let me in. And at the time, I was literally 21. But people always just assume I'm like 47.
Have you ever got... So were you buying beer at 16?
Yeah.
You were
like
able to
16,
just walk
17.
In
yeah. No joke. I would do the whole like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. I forgot my ID. And not that it worked 100% of the time, but it
the
definitely
fact that it
worked.
More
yeah.
than 0%
yeah,
of the
exactly.
time.
Yeah, exactly. It's shocking.
Totally. Illustrates how
but
old
I
you
always
look.
Looked old. Like, I'm not lying. I think in my entire life, I've been ID'd at bars a total of a dozen times. Like, I just never get ID'd. Or they come to restaurants like, we need to see everybody's ID. And then they look at me and be like, well, clearly not you. We need everyone else's IDs, like your parents.
You're the chaperone.
Yeah.
Everyone who's faking it.
We need to see their IDs, but not you, sir. Not You're clearly sir. Old as
booty call.
We'll show you our ID, sir.
Yeah.
I want to know, like, at 16... At what point you were like, oh, I can just walk in here and try and buy a beer?
Well, so the first, because it's one of those things where your friends talk you into it. Like, you'll totally get away with it. Look at you. And I was like, I don't know. And then I did it and I got away with it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I can just get away with it. So you have to keep in mind that I've been able to grow a full beard since ninth grade.
Whoa.
A full beard since ninth grade.
That's like 15.
Yeah. I started having chest hair in seventh grade. So that predated that. And I literally started balding when I was 18.
Holy crap.
So there's also a theory in my mind that when I was 12, I fell into a coma, and then my parents never wanted to tell me, so then I just came out and didn't remember. And they're like, yeah, you're a 12-year-old. Yeah.
You're like the Persian Jack.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And now the hair that I have left, which is my beard hair, is becoming salt and peppered, as you can see.
Yeah.
It works, though. Omar's a little salt and pepper up top.
That's true, which is crazy for a 26-year-old.
Yeah, which is so weird that at 26 you're starting to,
it's
starting to happen to you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about food. What was the last thing you ate?
The last thing I ate was just on the way here, me and my friend and your guys' friend Candace had Japanese food.
Mm.
But it was like hipster Japanese food. So I had spicy tuna and a bunch of vegetables and then a miso that had a lot of vegetables in it. It had like, mushrooms and things like that. Things that wouldn't normally be in a miso soup.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it wasn't very traditional. It was new age.
It was like new age. Well, here's what I'll say is Candace texted me like the Yelp page to it, and I was like, oh yeah, I can go for some Japanese food, and it looked like a very traditional Japanese food. And then I started walking up to it, and I couldn't find it at first because it didn't look like a Japanese restaurant. And then I figured out it was it, and it like smelled like incense outside, like they had incense burning. There was like, it was not, again, it was a very hipster Japanese place.
Yeah. It was also a hookah bar.
Yeah, it was, it might like have doubled. Yes, it might have doubled as a vape hookah bar. But the last thing I ate was Japanese food today.
Yeah. Like,
so did you guys go there because Candace, is she still vegetarian?
She.
Or like pescatarian or something?
You know what? We actually talked about this at length. She
good. Now
is
we don't
a,
have to
yeah.
bring her on.
Yeah, she's not going to be a guest on the show. Candace is a vegetarian, but she'll eat fish if it's around, or especially if she's traveling.
Mm.
And she's dairy-free unless she feels like eating pizza, which just means that she's not dairy-free and
right.
likes pizza and doesn't
right.
dig dairy and a lot of other things.
Right.
Yeah.
That's most people.
Yeah.
What is your favorite dish of all time?
My favorite dish of all time is kubide, which is a type of kebab. It's Persian, and it's made of ground beef, sometimes lamb, sometimes beef and lamb mixed. It's always the really fatty beef, so you can't use that like 99% fat-free beef or whatever.
Yeah.
Then they just grind a ton of onion into it, which sounds gross, but you honestly don't taste it. Onion secretly
delicious.
Actually keeps meat very moist. So if you're ever making like a burger at home, if you put like fine grated onion into it, it'll actually end up a lot better, and it's not going to taste like onion. But so they put a ton of that into it. They put a little bit of saffron and some other spices, and then they cook it on what essentially looks like a gigantic sword. Literally, you could stab someone with it. And then they put it over an open flame, which nothing is more Persian. And I don't mean like Iranian Persian. I mean like the Persian Empire. You think back to like people cooking big beefs over on a sword over an open flame. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I feel like it would be on the side of like pottery or something like that. It would be a picture of a dude in a turban using a sword to cook fucking kubide over an open flame. But that's how you make it, and it's delicious. Everything about it's perfect, especially if you have good ones.
And you make it.
I've made it. I wouldn't say I make it.
Okay.
I appreciate that though. I make it so.
Have you, when you made it, was it good?
Yeah, it was fantastic. So, here's the thing. One time, I was in the valley on a shoot. This was a long time ago. This was like 6 years ago, maybe longer. And I was in the valley on a shoot, and we had a long break in between. We were doing splits. And my mom called me, because I'm Persian. My mom calls me 3 times a day, but I love her, and it's okay. And I was telling her where I was, and she's like, oh my God, are you near the store and named like a Persian store, like whatever, Mohammed's or something? And I looked out of my window, and I swear to God, it was right there. And she's like, you know, they're the ones who sell the perfect skewers, because you can't just use any skewer to make kubide.
Yeah,
and she's like,
swords.
You know, they sell the best swords to make kubide. So I literally ran into the store and bought a bunch of them, and then I made kubide with it, and it was fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah. I highly recommend it.
So what is the best place in LA to get kubide?
Rafi's place, which is in Glendale.
That's the place that Reza has told me to go to for the past, like, 3-4 years, and I just haven't made it there.
Yeah. No, listen, it's in Glendale, so it's actually out of LA proper, which is whatever, but everybody, every Persian person will tell you that's actually the best Persian food in all of LA.
Wow.
And it's super fatty. It's really thick. That sounded weird. But also, the thing with kubide is it puts you to sleep. Like, it's so heavy and you don't notice. It's like this secretly really heavy dish. So you eat it and you're having a lot of fun. And then an hour later, you fall asleep in your car on the drive home.
Uh-oh.
And then you wake up smelling like onion, most likely.
So do you like to cook?
I do like to cook. I don't cook. It's like I've fallen into the cliche of Heather makes food so much better than me, and so much quicker and more frequently, that I've fallen out of the habit of cooking. But I technically like to cook. I just don't do it very often anymore. I do barbecue sometimes, but also she could barbecue if she wanted to, and I'm sure do a better job than me. The thing is, like, I know recipes, not like I follow them to a T, like I need 1 tablespoon or whatever, but like I know I can look in a fridge and be like, oh, we don't have dinner, and then Heather can look in a fridge and be like, yeah, we do, and then can throw shit together and it's good, where I don't have that side of cooking. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What is your favorite thing that Heather makes?
My favorite thing that Heather makes is going to sound stupid, but she makes garlic cauliflower mash. I'd never had cauliflower mash before she made it. And that's one of my favorite things. Cauliflower is actually good for you, at least in theory.
Yeah.
I don't know what else she puts
in practice. Yeah. As well.
Do you have any recipes that you can share? Like, what is something that you would say is your dish that you can cook? That you, like, off the top of your head could articulate?
Dish that I could cook that I could articulate?
Yeah.
Shit.
I should have asked this question in advance.
Yeah, Pop-tarts. It's okay. Yeah, I should have been loaded with that one. No, honestly, I wish I could say I could. I've learned the process of making good steak, which a lot of people think is on a grill, but it's definitely not. It's still the best thing to do is one very important step to making steak that a lot of people overlook is allowing the steak to get to room temperature.
I've heard that.
Because a cold steak meets heat. Contracts, becomes very tough. You don't want that.
Yeah.
So you allow it to get to room temperature. Then you pan fry it for like a minute to 2 minutes on each side, depending how thick it is, on a buttered pan. Mm-hmm. And then if you have a really good pan that you can actually transfer to the oven, you do the rest of the cooking in the oven for like 5 minutes. Mm. And that'll actually make you the best steak. Barbecue steak is not the best way to make it. Because you need to char that outside and you need to burn it and you got to get the juices locked in. Then you do that. Then you bring it out. You wrap it in tin foil, roughly 5 minutes. You leave the tin foil a little vented so it can breathe just a little bit. It continues to cook it out a little bit in its own juices. And that's where you get a great steak.
Wow.
I can at least say that.
I'm going to play this back.
I can at least say this very elaborate, descriptive way to cook a steak.
Off the top of my head. If I have to, yeah.
That's like that dude is like, he's like, oh, speech. Like, oh, I don't have a speech. Pull out a speech out of your pocket.
Well, what no one else can see is that I actually pulled the recipe out of my pocket. I don't know what I wish you told me in advance. Anyway, if I were to do it.
So I want to talk about you were in Italy recently, right?
Yes, Sicily in particular.
Tell us about that.
It was incredible. I've never been. Have you been in Italy or no?
No.
Okay, nope. I've never been to any of Italy. Sicily is awesome because it's not as touristy. Besides Palermo and Taormina, they don't get tourists. So two things about that. One, everything is super authentic and it's really fresh because they're not mass-making food. The other side to that is you really can't make it through the country unless you're there with somebody who knows the country. I was actually lucky enough that one of my good friends who we were traveling with, he spent the first 20 years of his life in Sicily and was born in Palermo. So he took us around. But we were out there for a buddy's wedding and we took 2 weeks and literally drove around the entire island of Sicily and basically just ate a ton. And that's all we did. But a few things. One, pasta there is the main dish, as you'd expect. But it's not like the American version that we're used to. They actually don't make heavy meat sauce pasta. Like a pasta bolognese or spaghetti bolognese is like a very New York thing. That's not something that they do in Sicily. Mm-hmm. Because the pasta is so fresh there that it's like the main dish. So usually it's just like pasta, a little bit of olive oil, maybe like some mixed in seafood, which is awesome and always super fresh there because you're literally on the coast. We had spaghetti with fresh squid ink. Which was incredible, and it was just that. It was literally just spaghetti and fresh squid ink, and it was the most incredible thing you'll eat. A lot of times it's just pasta with, like, olive oil and some cut-up tomato, but even tomato there tastes different than it does in the U.S. because it's not watery and it's real, and it's nuts. Like, they haven't caught up to, like, processed food there, so they're not – it's not, like, boxed pasta. Though I'm sure they have boxed pasta, but you get my point.
Yeah.
No, it was awesome.
What was the best dish you ate there?
Best dish I ate there was actually probably the spaghetti and squid ink that I mentioned. But in general, if you like oysters, their oysters there are super meaty and incredible. We went to a friend of mine's wedding. He's not Sicilian, but his now wife is. And we ate for 4 hours. That's not an exaggeration.
Oh my God.
We ate for 4 hours. They started with like an all-you-can-eat antipasto, which basically just means shit ton of fish.
Yeah.
It was like octopus. It was clams, calamari, like everything. It was incredible, all super fresh. And then like then they brought out pasta. Then they brought out more fish. And they just kept bringing you stuff until you're like, please stop bringing me things. But then they don't understand English. And then they kept bringing it.
Right.
And then, you know, then you have to eat it.
This was in Palermo?
The wedding was actually in a little place called Castle Lamare.
Okay, which where is that?
It's a beautiful town. It's like almost...
Oh, you've never
been? Well, yeah, you haven't never been to Castle Lamare. It's almost silly to call the city... It's like a beautiful city by... It's a beautiful little town by the sea, which it is, but everywhere there is. Because every time you go, you're like, wow, the next place can't be as pretty as this. And then you go, and then it is. It's but unique at the same point. But yeah, I was in Castle Lamare, which nice. Is about... Like, I don't remember, but I'd have to guess, like, 2 hours west of Palermo.
If you could give anybody advice, because I know we have a couple friends who have gotten married or are getting married this year that actually will be honeymooning in Italy.
But sure. Will not be listening to this podcast.
Definitely not. They don't
We'll
tune
just
in.
Relay the message.
Yeah, we'll just text them whatever you say.
We'll just transcribe this interview and then send it to them. What advice would you give to somebody who's going to travel to Italy?
One, wear a lot of sunscreen.
Did you get burnt?
I got my head actually like looked like a globe because it was like peeling off in random places, which actually sounds a lot grosser than it is, but it was,
it sounds
as gross as it is. No, it's gross, but definitely wear a lot of sunscreen. The advice I'd have to give is we took a boat to an island that I think only locals travel to. Like, it's their vacation spot when they're vacationing, called Lampedusa. And I highly recommend going. It's fucking incredible. It's this tiny island. It's actually right off of Tunisia. It's, like, the most south of Italy you can get and still be an island that is Italy. Mm-hmm. And it's this tiny town. You can rent, like, an Airbnb or stay at a hotel or whatever. But everything's there. Everything's fresh caught from there. So every restaurant that you go to, literally, like, you'll go through the menu and you'll be like, oh, I want this. I'll be like, oh, we didn't catch any of that today. This is what we have. Like, if they didn't catch it that day, they don't have it. It was incredible. And then my biggest recommendation is rent a boat, which sounds way more overwhelming than it is. First of all, do you know that if a boat is less than 55 feet, which is huge, by the way, a 55-foot boat.
That's two Wienermobiles.
It's two Wienermobiles.
Yeah.
Which is what I was going to say. That's so crazy.
Standard unit.
Yeah. That's normally how you measure something like that out. Yeah. if it's less than 55 feet, you don't need a license, which is a little crazy.
That's terrifying. That's not Sicily.
Or in Italy?
No. That stands for the U.S. too. I actually don't technically know what it is for Sicily, but I know in the U.S. if it's under 55 feet or maybe 50 or something like that, you don't need it.
That's crazy.
But it's not as intimidating as one thinks. They just kind of run you through it, and then you can just take a boat out. And the water there is beautiful and super warm, and it's really clear. And that was one of the most fun things we did, is just taking a boat out, and then you just anchor. That's a boating term.
You put the anchor down,
but we called it anchoring the boat.
Sure.
Then you anchor the boat, and you just hop out and swim, and you're on your own little boat island thing. It's super fun.
Are there sharks in that area?
I don't know the Italian word for shark.
Okay. So you were just willing to risk it.
I was willing to risk it. I don't think there was, although you could literally look down and see fish all the time, which was cool.
So if I was
more of a man, I'd probably grab one or something like that. Is that what they do? Is that what men do?
Yeah, they grab fish.
Italian men, they just reach down, pull up a nice salmon, present it to their woman.
And beaches there, European style, topless guys.
Wow.
It's like being at a pool party at Dr. Dre's house or something.
Are they also bottomless?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not interested.
Did Heather go topless?
No, she didn't. She didn't. She's too American. I thought about it. I was almost coming. I was wearing a rash guard. God, if I was a dude who wore a rash guard to the beach. No, I didn't. But so also, I know you wouldn't categorize me as a big dude, but the joke of there was is every Italian person I met was like, oh my God, look at this guy, Mr. America, like, and kept talking about how big I was. Well, they Italians there kind of ran in two sizes, which was either like a super scrawny person or like your big fat cliche mafioso looking Italian dude.
There's no in between.
But there wasn't like the broad shouldered kind of like God body type like me, like a Greek god, you know what I'm saying? No, but there wasn't like
an American Zeus.
Yes. Well, it's also funny because here it's like, oh yeah, my Persian friend Reza, and there they're like, Mr. America, this is what it's like over there.
So are they Russian?
Yeah, they are. It's the only accent I can get close to doing, I guess.
That works.
Yeah.
Did you try to communicate?
Well, I had the crutch of our friend Renato, who can speak fluent Italian.
Oh, nice.
So I didn't really have to. I feel like I would have learned more. I mean, I learned all the, like, the standard stuff, like ciao. And that goes for two things. It's hello or goodbye, which is pretty great.
It's like aloha.
Yeah, it's like aloha. But no, I learned very little. I was picking up some towards the end. Like, I could do, like, I've already lost it. I've only been back for a week. But I could do, like, the cool guy, like, see you later, good seeing you kind of thing, which I felt was cool. But it was.
Buon dia.
Yeah.
Did you learn how to say I'm a producer in Italian?
Yeah. I'm a producer. No. The only thing I learned was scusi per mia moglie, which means I'm sorry for my wife. That's the only thing. I was like, I have to learn that day one. No, not that often, granted. She's good at insulting people, you know, so I had to be armed with that one.
But subconsciously accommodating.
Yeah. But subconsciously accommodating. She just kept giving Italian people meatballs. Like, we don't even make these here.
This is New York.
Well, I'm sold. I want to go to Italy now. I was telling Omar that there's some airlines that are, like, battling with each other in Italy and Spain right now. And if you book a ticket from the U.S. to there, it's pretty cheap. Like, you can get a round ticket to... I was looking at Spain for, like, around $500.
Oh, wow. That's really cheap.
Yeah.
So we flew to New York, like, separately. And then from New York, you can do a direct flight to Palermo on one airline that flies, like, three times a week called Meridiana, which is the most garbage airline in the world. Whoa. But they're the only airline that you wouldn't have to transfer in Rome. And I've heard that transferring in Rome can just be a shit show. So we wanted to get there directly.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Any sort of international transfer is always stressful.
Yeah, we did all right, though.
We did okay.
Granted, it was, like, in Scandinavia. So they're, I feel like they're
in.
So, yeah, you blended in.
I was
corralled into a cage. no, I just feel like the Swedes and the Norwegians.
The Norwegians, yeah.
Whatever the term is, the Norwegians.
The Norwegians.
I just feel like they're, I mean... It's like IKEA. It's like everything is, like, so orderly and, like...
I want to remind you when you called my wife subtly racist.
They're just like
IKEA out there. You know what I'm talking about.
These IKEAs.
These IKEAs, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, so why is it like IKEA out there?
Everything was just, like, orderly
kind
and,
of,
like...
Their airport did kind of feel like IKEA.
Yeah, it just
gave
us this
it.
IKEA vibe.
It smelled
like
meatballs.
I get what you're saying. It's orderly.
It was great. I was so
We had
in
to
love
build our
airport.
Own plane, you know.
Yeah, sure. Oh, okay. Now I get what you mean by
really
IKEA.
Really trying time in our relationship.
Yeah, it's all made of condensed wood.
Yeah.
And just a little Allen wrench.
Yeah.
That's the only thing you need.
Traveling with you sounds fun. So you still have family in Iran, correct?
I do.
How often do you go back?
I haven't been back in like 8 years now. I've been to Iran 7 times, but the last time I went was about 8 years ago. Because even for me, I actually have dual citizenship because both my parents were born in Iran. Mm. But you'd think that would make it easier, which technically it does because you can really only travel with special permission if you're not a citizen. But I owe army time. So I have to get excused from it every time I go.
So you're like kind of on the run.
Kind of, yeah. I'm like a draft dodger, I guess.
Yeah.
We have a big fan base in Iran.
Yeah,
are
that's
you
good.
Gonna get
that's
in true. Trouble after
Probably, actually.
How do you get excused from it?
You have to write them and you have to do all the stuff. So they give you like a stamp and they say like, all right, if you show up between like February 1st and April, whatever, we agree that you won't do it. But here's the other thing to keep in mind is Iran is also one of those countries where they can kind of do whatever they want anyway. So they can easily be like, you're excused. And then you show up and they're like, but we decided you're a spy. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, we decided, never mind. And
has that happened to you?
No, it's never happened. I mean, the most shit I've ever gotten there is one time I was leaving. And I put my bags on like the X-ray conveyor belt thing, And their conveyor belts there, at least the last time I went, was still like the conveyor belt at the grocery store where it's not constantly running. Like they have to like push a pedal or something like that to get
like
it going.
Crank.
Yeah. So the guy just sat there and wasn't like having my bags go through. So I was just standing there very awkwardly. And the one thing you don't do there is you don't start shit at the airport. I mean, you don't start shit with anybody government wise there because again, they can just decide to arrest you. So we're like standing there awkwardly for like 5 minutes. And then finally, in Farsi, I ask him, I'm like, hey, like, are we good here? And he goes, in English, he goes, oh, sorry, dude, like that. Like, he had figured out that I was not, like, Iranian, and was just waiting to give me shit. He was literally waiting for me to say something so he could give his best, like, oh, sorry, dude.
So are you fluent in Farsi?
I am.
Do you speak it with your parents?
I do. Not, you know, I do. I was going to say not as much. I mean, now that I'm married, because Heather doesn't speak Farsi, if we go over there, we try not to in an effort not to be rude. But
just talk about her in English.
Yeah. We talk about her in English now. Yeah. We're straight to her face about it now. Yeah.
Your family
which
now.
Is pretty. Also, if you're ever at a Persian family's house and they decide to randomly start speaking Farsi in front of you, they're most likely talking shit about you. That's just like a given.
Yeah.
But so mine's gotten rusty, but if I get thrown into, like, a scenario with it, I can pick it back up pretty quick.
What's your favorite thing to say in Farsi, and can you please say it for us? I don't even know what the language sounds like.
Well, ask me to say something, and I'll say it. My favorite thing to say would be...
I would like to eat spaghetti.
Man mikham spaghetti bokhoram.
That sounded way prettier than I expected. We talked about this, like, German, how language. We thought
yeah,
German.
Yeah.
Well, when we were in
well,
Germany,
it has a lot of
so
"h."
Pretty.
That one avoided the "h" sound.
Also,
so
there's
sounded
no word
prettier.
For spaghetti.
I like "h" sounds.
There is no word for spaghetti.
Did you say, what was the last word you said?
Bokhoram.
Oh.
So you.
Sounded like
so
Boko
like,
Haram.
Yeah. Boko Haram. Yeah. Al Qaeda spaghetti.
Boko
Haram. No, it's. It's a language where you end up speaking it backwards sometimes. So Bokhoram actually means I would like to eat. Mikham is like, well, actually, so Bokhoram is like eat. It's a tense of eat. Mikham is like I want to, and then spaghetti gets shoved in the middle. So basically you're saying I want to spaghetti eat it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
Do you, maybe this is too personal of a question, but do you and Heather think you want to have kids?
Yeah, we do. I mean, Heather decided we're going to have kids.
Great. So have you guys talked about, if you have kids, like, are you going to teach them Farsi?
We would. I mean, we definitely try to. So my parents taught me Farsi first before I ever learned English because they knew I'd just learn English.
ESL.
And, ESL. That's why I have such a bad accent in my English. But they knew, they're like, whatever, he'll learn it. And then if you learn it as a kid, you don't forget it. Now, I don't know that I would go that deep with the kids, but it would be, I would like them to be able to speak it.
Yeah.
It becomes helpful later, you know, to know other languages.
Have you ever, because you've worked in TV now for a couple of years and you've worked on shoots internationally, right? Have you ever been able to put it to use in a work setting?
Yeah, last show actually. One of the people that we interviewed, granted they lived in Belgium. Or, no, I'm sorry, they lived in Berlin, different place than Belgium. I don't know, it's all IKEA.
It's
you know
close.
What I'm saying? they lived in Berlin, but they were Iranian, and their English wasn't great. So during a lot of the, like, pre-interviewing and stuff that we did, I could speak to them in Farsi.
Wow.
Which was cool.
That's
great.
And what show was that?
That was The Story of Us with Morgan Freeman, which is the full title. I'm not saying that it's with Morgan
Freeman.
Oh,
it is? Oops.
Yeah, and that's fine.
So I screwed it up in the intro.
No, you're okay. I mean, I also think the network... for clear purposes, likes to make that the full title, but Story of Us is fine.
I mean,
it's
Reza
a story
won't
of us.
Do anything, but Morgan's people
yeah.
Might
they're
come
gonna call
us.
Yeah.
What was it? What's it like working with Morgan Freeman, aka God?
Sure. he's awesome, dude. He's super funny.
Big homie God.
Yeah, the big homie God. He's a really nice dude. He's very. He likes to talk about philosophical stuff, which is actually where the show comes from.
Really? Like, that's his personality?
Yeah, it's his personality. Wow. He really likes to dig into those kind of things. So even Story of God, for those of you who haven't seen it, National Geographic's highest rated show ever. No big deal.
Woo! That's fine. So,
you know, maybe you guys are part of the people who saw it. Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I mean, Kylie and I have definitely seen it, but for the listeners.
Realistically, no one's ever seen it who's listening to this. But
no one has cable that listens to this.
It was always like a philosophical look at themes that had to do with religion.
Okay.
So it wasn't like even when I had first heard about the show and I was asked if I wanted to be part of it, I was like, what? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, story of God. I kind of thought we're going to go around and be like, so tell me about when, you know what I'm saying? Like, when did you find religion and all this kind of stuff? But it's really not. Like, it's just he's very interested about, like, speaking of the themes and stuff, like heaven and hell, and like how does it affect you and all this kind of stuff. So he's fun for that reason. He's also
sounds super fun.
Yeah, he's also just like he's also just like a normal dude who likes to drink vodka sodas and
do
whatever. And he's one of the hardest working people ever, as one could imagine. Like, he will film with us and then go do press for a movie and then have to fly out that night because the next day he's doing a Disney film, you know what I'm saying? And then come film on the weekend with us. Like, he's one of those dudes who literally works every single day straight, essentially. Wow. Which is wild. But also he's just a guy who's been doing this for a long time and also knows what he wants, which is fun in certain scenarios and then not in others. Because you're like, hey, what if, or like the director or one of us producers will be like, this might be cool. And he's like, nah, I don't think so. And then we all just have to be like, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
you're right, Dad.
No, that makes sense, actually.
So that's better. Not a creator of the show, is he?
He is.
Oh, he interesting. Is a creator of the show. So he does have like an actual hand.
Yeah. So it's his production company. He co-created the show. I might be botching this part. I believe he co-created the show with James Younger, who's the EVP or EP on the show, EVP at the company.
Okay.
But I'm almost positive they co-created it together.
Cool.
But I could be wrong about.
Tell us a little bit about when you worked on Booze Traveler.
Booze
did you travel
Traveler
a lot, or were you in?
I did not. That one I didn't travel for. I did travel on God and I traveled a little bit on Us, but Booze Traveler, I was like a home-based producer. Basically what happened with that one is it was originally picked up for 7 episodes or 8 episodes by Travel Channel. It was a brand new show, created by
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, created by Morgan Freeman. No, but I was gonna say created by a woman who's super cool, whose name I'm blanking on, but
she won't listen.
Yeah, she wasn't in the industry at all, and basically she's actually Russian, so maybe I can do the accent and it would work.
Yeah.
But basically she was like, I like this show, I want to make it. And she's one of those people who, like, if you were to be like, hey, we need to build, like, a building by tomorrow, she'd figure out how to do it. You know what I'm talking about? Like, she knew nothing about the industry, went and filmed a sizzle for the show, cornered a Travel Channel exec, like, at a hotel or something, and was like, you have to watch the sizzle for my show. And he's like, all right, I'll watch it sometime. She's like, no, you have to watch it, like, right now. And he watched and was like, actually, I love this. And he bought it. And then the production company that I was working with at the time, Cargo 7, they were like, well, we need to give it to a real production company. So they gave it to Cargo 7. Cool. And the original order was like, I want to say 7 or 8 episodes. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, when the first episode started coming in, they're like, holy shit, we really like this and we need a lot more. So they doubled the order.
Wow.
It went from like 7 to 15, like overnight. So that's when I actually got brought in. One of my good friends was working on it. And then they're like, we need more people because we have to produce more episodes.
Right.
So when I was on it, it was really fun, but it was also really early in its conception. So we were constantly trying to figure out what the show was, because really all it was somebody traveling around and trying exotic alcohol and meeting cool people. Later, what we figured out that it was this fish out of water element, because the host is this guy, Jack Maxwell, who's like your everyday thick Boston accent guy. Mr. America. And then we send him to places like Armenia, you know what I'm saying, where he'd have like alcohol that was made of goat's blood, you know what I'm saying, or something crazy like that. And it was just fun to watch him in these environments. So that's what we kind of started shifting the show towards. But there was nothing more awesome than being like, hey, any research today on alcohol? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
You have to go drink for work purposes.
Yeah, we had to go drink for work purposes. We used to drink on Fridays. The team would be like, whatever came back that week. You know what I'm saying?
That's fun.
Like, we would drink. And also, being the clever person I am, when we were dividing up shows, I took the two domestic episodes, which was Louisiana and Tennessee, because I was like, one day this will help me out. And then one day I went to Louisiana, and I got a lot of hookups from, like, bars and things like that.
Nice. Because,
you know,
booze traveler paid off.
Booze traveler paid forward for me.
Well, the last thing I was going to ask you about was, you did comedy and you transitioned into TV.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, like, 5 or 10 years down the line, what would be, like, the ideal career for you? Would you be, like, producing comedy? Or would comedy just be dead and you're just producing whatever? What?
No, comedy's for sure not dead to me. I, you know, the ideal thing for me is producing comedy, bigger comedy TV shows and or movies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, that's how I went into stand-up in the first place, was I had produced some smaller comedy movies and then finally built my way up to, like, directing one. I was 24 and I did a movie and I was super excited because, again, I was 24 and it was like, it was originally a co-production with National Lampoon, which at that time, it's like I'd grown up watching National Lampoon movies and I was like, this is going to be incredible. And, It ended up being anything but incredible. It was a horrible, horrible movie. It was like, it had to be, because of the business side of things, it was like early released because it was timed with like, it came around in timing when National Lampoon was actually in trouble for fraud and stuff like that. So they had to drop out like 2 weeks before. So then all of a sudden the budget cut in half. And then the production company that was still on it and funding the other half, they needed to put it out as soon as possible to get returns because they were kind of in trouble on some stuff.
Oh,
so
boy.
Basically the entire movie was finished in post in like the matter of a few weeks. So after that I was like, I'm just not gonna do this stuff for a while.
This is beer pong saved
yeah,
my life.
Yeah, beer pong saved my life. So once that happened, I took time off from that stuff and I'd always wanted to do stand up. So that's when I did stand up and then had some time to think about things and realized what I really want to be doing is focusing back on producing. I realized that was always the aspect of it that I enjoyed. I'd moved down to be a director,
mm-hmm.
but when you're outside the industry, you don't know what anybody does anyway. So you're mm-hmm. just kind of like, I want to direct because that's the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd fallen into producing before that, but it was always meant to lead up to the directing. And once I did, I was like, you know what? I'd like to focus on producing.
Yeah,
so,
it's fun.
Yeah. So I didn't have time for the stand-up, went to the producing, and I've been doing this stuff, which has been awesome. But yeah, I'll be blending it back in.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, now, the last question we always ask on the show, we ask everybody, and you can choose to answer this however you want, and it's, what's your secret sauce in life, in cooking, whatever?
Ah,
say it, answer it however you want. You could say ketchup, or you could say, I don't know.
Smoking weed, whatever.
Yeah.
You blazing? Can I say blazing
Fat
is my blunt. Secret?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess just always be open to opportunity because all the stuff that I didn't want to do and almost talked myself out of doing, I ended up being a great part of my life. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So it's like, again, stand-up, I could have done it a lot earlier, and I never did. I always talked myself out of it. And granted, stand-up didn't make my career, but I met a lot of my really good friends through it, like Omar, like Yas, like Robbie, and a lot of other people I met through stand-up, and that made me connections in general anyway. Or even that last show, Story of God, I almost talked myself out of doing it because I was like, I don't know anything about this stuff, and I'm terribly unqualified to talk about, like, religion, and all these producers are really smart in a different way than me.
Mm-hmm.
But it all ended up just being really about story and people, and I could do that. And again, that's created opportunity for me. So there's a lot of things, and I've seen those people around me too. It's like, it's funny because you work so hard for opportunity, then you get opportunity. It's not the opportunity that you wanted, so you want to talk yourself out of it. And I've seen that with a lot of my friends. I've seen them, like, director friends of mine get offered something and be like, that's not what I want. And it's like, you worked all the way to get there. Just do and see how it goes. And it almost always ends up a positive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So don't, you know.
That's a good one.
That's good.
Thanks.
I like that.
Thanks for bestowing your wisdom upon
us.
Of course. And
our listeners.
I actually have one more question.
Yeah.
Now, please forgive any sort of ignorance. But is there a difference between Iranian and Persian? Like, what are they interchangeable?
Okay, so that's a great question.
He doesn't know the answer.
That's a great question.
No, I do. Yeah. No, it's not racist because we did this to ourselves. Iranians are obviously from Iran, the country.
Yeah.
In what, 1979 or 1980, before any of us were born, anybody listening to this was born, because it's like a millennial podcast, right? Yeah, you're old as dog shit, so you were there. There was the Iranian hostage crisis, and that was the first time that Iranian Americans were faced with, like, oh, it doesn't sound good to be Iranian. So they started going by Persian.
Rebranded.
They started a rebranding, and strangely enough, in the last 30 years, it's still never been a good time to be an Iranian, so everybody goes by Persian. But this is the one justification that I'll give to it, is if you're from Iran, you can also be of different ethnicity. So there's Turks who live in Iran who are actually Turkish, but they're also Iranian.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There are Persians, like me and my family. So my family's Iranian, I'm Persian, Iranian, whatever, but I was born in America, so I'm also American. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Reza, it was wonderful having you in our living room chatting about this.
Of course.
Uh-oh, I just told everybody where we record. Whoops. What do you want to promote right now? You can promote it.
I mean, I guess...
Keep in mind, it'll blow up. Whatever you promote.
Booty call. Can Twitter handle the bandwidth that they'll get from... I mean, I guess my Twitter. I really... Like, sadly, I haven't tweeted in 3 weeks, but follow me anyway.
That's fine.
You know?
Because you're in Italy.
Maybe some
At Reza, R-E-Z-A underscore Riazzi, R-I-A-Z-I.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And when does Story of Us with Morgan Freeman premiere?
Story of Us with Morgan Freeman comes out October 11th on National Geographic. Check it out. I'm sure it'll immediately also go to Hulu because it's a Fox.
Can't wait to watch. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a great episode. Yay! Bye. Booty call, not quite a booty call, a booty call. Booty call.
Get this.